The Criminal Justice Subcommittee will come to order. Ben, please call the roll.
Chair Trunau?
Here.
Vice Chair Barnaby?
Here.
Ranking Member Rayner?
Present.
Representatives Abbott?
Here.
Baker?
Here.
Brackett?
Here.
Gracie Davis?
Here.
Brannon?
Here.
Casello? Casello? Garcia?
Present.
Gottlieb?
Here.
Jock?
Here.
Michael?
Here.
Plakin? Silvers?
Here.
Stark?
Here.
Tuck?
Here.
Yarkoski?
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ben. I want to remind everyone to please silence their cell phones. Also, a reminder for members and presenters, please ensure that you turn your microphone on when speaking and off when finished. I also want to request that you please fill out a public appearance card if you intend to speak before the committee today. I want to welcome everybody for first, second day of session. Happy New Year to everyone. Today we'll be considering six bills. HB 601, Complaints Against Law Enforcement Officers and Correctional Officers. HB 713, Battery Offenses. HB 715, Public Records. Problem Solving Court Participant Records. A PC for HB 231, Exposures to First Responders to Fentanyl and Fentanyl Analogs, PCS for HB 489, Unlawful Possession of Firearms or Weapons by a Person Adjudicated Delinquent, and a PCS for HB 549, Theft. All right, we'll get right to it. First bill up today will be PCS for HB 549, Theft by Representative Rommel. You are recognized to present your bill.
Good morning, Chairman, and thanks for having this 8 o'clock meeting. Love getting up early and coming to the Capitol. But really, thank you, and thank you, members. Welcome back. Hope everybody had a great new year. It's estimated in the United States last year, in 2023, there was $120 billion in retail theft from whether it's shoplifting or whatever it is. And we've seen a rise of these smash and grab where a mob will show up and literally destroy a store, you know, harm some of the employees, and it's actually, you know, frightens individuals from shopping. We've seen stores, I think it was a retail store in San Francisco that was open for 117 years, and they quit. They no longer open. So this bill addresses that. This bill will discourage individuals from doing it, and then those that actually do it, they're going to pay the price, and they're going to be punished. Under this bill, it'll be a third-degree felony if someone commits a retail theft with five or more people. It's a second-degree felony if that same group does it and encourages others to join through social media. And it'll be a first-degree felony for repeat offenders that have been convicted of the same crime two or more times in a one-year time period. In the same, you know, period over the last year, we've seen more of these, the best way to do it is call them porch pirates, people showing up on your porch. They're caught on, you know, your doorbell ring, and they're stealing your product. Currently, that is a felony. If it's more than $100, we're going to reach that to $40, and that is the bill, sir.
Thank you. Members, questions? Questions on the bill? Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So as I understand it, Rep. Rommel, if an individual steals a package off a porch, as you said, which in the language of the bill, I think, says an unenclosed curtilage of a property, and they steal a T-shirt that somebody purchased for $50 off the internet that was delivered, and they're a first-time offender, would the bill reclassify that first-time offender who steals a $50 T-shirt from someone's porch?
That would be a felony.
Questions?
All I have for now.
Follow. Okay. Questions? Seeing no more questions. Are there any amendments on the bill? Seeing no amendments. Public testimony. We have several. We have Jonathan Weber, SPLC Action Fund, waiving in opposition. We have Timothy Nungesser, National Federation of Independent Businesses, waiving in support. We have Angela Bonds from Florida Retail Federation, waiving in support. We have Barney Bishop from Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waiving in support. Okay. Are there any members wishing to debate on the bill? Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Rep Romo, I understand, you know, the predicament that we're having with package theft, and it's certainly, you know, an epidemic that costs all of us more at the point of sale. At the same point in time, I really can't wrap my head around the fact that, you know, we increased the threshold from $100 to $750 as it relates to petty theft to grand theft, and yet here we are just bringing that right back, and then for a first-time offender, you know, who doesn't necessarily know the value of the item that they're stealing, to create a grand theft to give that person the scar of a felony offense. There's other portions of the bill, and I know it's not your bill, but you're carrying it today. The 365 days, you know, for two thefts, I think is incredibly problematic. So there might be a point in time where I could be an upvote on this, but that's not today. I appreciate you bringing the bill, and I do think it's an epidemic. I want that to be clear, but I can't vote for the bill today in the posture that it's in.
Ranking Member Rayner, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Rommel, for this bill. While we did not have an opportunity to discuss, I want to kind of echo my colleagues. A sentiment, Rep. Gottlieb's, as someone who is a consistent prayer of Jeff Bezos's internet and all the things that come with that, I also have a vested interest in my packages getting to me, and especially because I get them delivered every day. However, with that being said, I am concerned about the enhancements that are in the bill. I'm concerned, as Rep. Gottlieb mentioned, the 30 days to 365 days, the threshold for the first-time offender. I tend not to like to create new crimes or either enhance crimes. Obviously, y'all know that I'm a career criminal defense attorney, so for me, while I understand and I appreciate, as someone who probably has financed Fashion Nova and all the other internet entities, I don't know this bill in its form today is where we need to land and how I could be able to vote up on it. As Rep. Gottlieb said, I'm not going to say it, never say never. However, I will be a no on it today, but I will watch it as it works through the process, and hopefully it can get to a place where I could be a yes on it.
Thank you. Seeing no other debate, Representative Rommel, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chairman, and Representative Gottlieb, I understand where you're coming from. Matter of fact, when we did raise the felony threshold for what was a traditional retail theft, I worked on that with Rep. Donalds to help get there, because I do take liberty seriously, and those that have been convicted of just a minor petty theft, you know, I thought we had to do something. But this is a whole new way. I mean, we've seen cities in America are destroyed because of it. I mean, retail a store open 117-year close, go to Duane Reade in New York, one person at a time, and we see hyperinflation, you know, across the country. And this is one of the reasons, but the home thing, I couldn't imagine as a kid, or these are adults, going on someone's property and taking their property. I mean, there's many areas that you may get shot if you go on someone's property and take something. So I don't know what other message we can do. We do see other areas of the country where they're just saying, it's no big deal, it's not even a crime, they don't arrest you. We don't want that to happen in Florida. We have a great economy. We have a thriving economy. We have thriving businesses here. And we don't want the epidemic to come here. But I do take, I actually, and so some of those enhancements in this bill, they did come from me, and I took it very serious. And matter of fact, I actually had pushback from people. And I said, listen, we don't want this to happen here. I don't want it to happen here. We have a great life in Florida, and we want to continue that. And so maybe this will send a message and so deter people from going to other people's property. Maybe it'll save their life because the world's a little upside down right now. And so maybe the threat of going to jail will save their life, and maybe it'll help retail stores stay open and people keep their jobs. With that, I close.
Thank you. Representative Rommel, having closed on his bill, Ben, please call the roll on PCS for HB 549 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Bracy Davis?
No.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
No.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Blaken?
Yes.
Rayner?
No.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yarkoski?
Yes.
Chair Truno?
Yes.
15 yeas, 3 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show PCS for HB 549 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So next up, we'll have HB 715, Public Record Problem Solving Court Participant Records by Representative Maney. You are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, Ranking Member, members of the committee. I think I sent everybody a text last night briefly describing this bill. It's a short, simple bill. Historically, the first specialty courts or problem-solving courts were drug courts, and the legislature gave participants in drug courts a confidential exemption to public records because of the nature of what was going on in their cases. After that, next came mental health courts, and then came veteran treatment courts. Those two types of courts do not have the same kind of confidentiality provisions that drug courts have. All this bill does is give all three of those types of courts the same public records exemptions to protect the participants, protect the courts so that people aren't dissuaded from going to a specialty or problem-solving court because their confidential information is getting released. Those kinds of records are everything from when they apply for the court to treatment and that sort of thing. That is the bill, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Questions on the bill? We do have one amendment. Seeing no questions on the bill, you are recognized to present barcode number 597933. Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an even simpler amendment. It adds two words to the bill to make sure that they're not only confidential, but they are, quote, exempt. That's it. That is the amendment, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment. Anyone wishing to debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Close on the amendment. Waive close.
All those in favor of adopting the amendment signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Any opposed? By your vote, the amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill as amendment. Is there any public testimony on the bill? If Aaron Wyatt, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, waving in support. We have Sean Bernfin, State Court System, waving in support. We have Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. Members, we are in debate. Anyone wishing to debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Manny, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close.
Having closed on his bill, Ben, please call the roll on HB 715.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett? Brackett? Bracy Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yarkoski?
Yes.
Chair Trino?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 715 reported favorably. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee.
Next, we will have HB 713, battery offenses by Representative Porras. Representative, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, and Ranking Member. I apologize if any of you are squeamish today. We got a little bit of a graphic bill today. Mr. Chair, HB 713 would create a third-degree felony if someone were to knowingly cause or attempt to cause a person to come into contact with blood, seminal fluid, urine, and feces, either by throwing, tossing, or projecting to said person. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions on the bill? Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. It's been brought to my attention, Rep. Porras, that this bill could potentially be used the morning after a romantic dalliance in which one individual says, even after perhaps a night of consent, that they didn't want these bodily fluids being expelled onto them. So sort of a sexual battery type of offense. Has that been discussed, reviewed, or contemplated as not being an offense for purposes of this bill?
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I mean, I have not heard that in the past. I mean, we worked with several state attorneys, not just in Miami-Dade County, but also in the Tampa Bay area. But, I mean, I'd love to sit with you another time and try to see how we can work that out.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. I believe that the bill does not encompass spitting or fluids out of one's mouth, but I just want to ensure, is that how you all read the bill, and is that the intent of the bill moving forward?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, saliva is not included in the bill.
Seeing no more questions, we have no amendments on the bill. Is there any public testimony we have? Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. Debate. Any debate on the bill, members? Seeing no debate on the bill. Representative Porras, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to let my prime co-representative Alvarez take the closing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this will be very brief. I just want to make sure everyone understood this was born from a request of our investigators and our detectives and sexual crimes unit at the City of Tampa Police Department, and specifically a detective, Amanda Baranowski. Her frustration was born from having to tell victims of sexual assault, which we previously wouldn't have qualified this or categorized as sexual assault, that if those offenses had happened, that all that she could do for them is a battery offense and a misdemeanor, and the bad guy just gets to walk while the victim continues to get haunted by the unwanted sexual act. We know that sexual acts against any people that are unwanted, especially these types of batteries, stay with the victim for years. So if there's anything that we can do to tighten this up and make it so that we motivate people not to do so, that'd be great. But if we can punish them when they do, that would be even better. Thank you for your time. We close.
Representative Alvarez and Representative Porras, having closed on their bill, Ben, please call the roll on HB 713 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett? Bracy Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
No.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yarkoski? Chair Trunau?
Yes.
16 yeas, one nay, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 713 reported favorably. Thank you very much. Next up, we'll have HB 601, complaints against law enforcement officers and correctional officers by Representative Duggan. Representative Duggan, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members. This bill enhances the existing statutory framework known as the Law Enforcement Officer Bill of Rights by preempting to the state the receipt, processing, or investigation of complaints of misconduct by law enforcement or correctional officers. That's the bill.
Thank you, members. Questions on the bill? Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. You shouldn't have told me at breakfast that I was having a good hair day. I want all the TV exposure. No, but in all honesty, Rep. Duggan, I appreciate the bill, and I understand that there is perhaps a need for to formally make the complaint process easier. But my concern is the bill says misconduct, which is identified as or defined rather as unacceptable or improper behavior. Who under your bill is going to deal with all those complaints of quote unquote misconduct? Because it's very, very, very broad as to what would be law enforcement misconduct.
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nothing will change with respect to all of the existing venues in which those allegations are handled. So that would start with the officers employing agency, internal affairs, to include after that, or in addition, I mean, all of these essentially are cumulative. At a minimum, it would be the employing officers agency. Excuse me, the officers employing agency. Then there's also the Criminal Justice Standards and Training Commission. A complaint can be filed, a verifiable complaint with them will trigger an investigation. You have the local state attorney. You have the attorney general in the form of a statewide prosecutor and or a statewide grand jury. You have FDLE. You have the FBI if the allegation is relating to a federal protection, federal civil rights violation, for example, and the U.S. attorney. So all of those protections exist today. All of them will remain in place. We're just clarifying that this bill is just clarifying that the receipt processing and investigation is preempted to the state in the sense of not local civilian accountability boards.
Representative Gottlieb, follow up.
Thank you, Chair. So does that mean we would be getting rid of the civilian review boards?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It means that any existing civilian review boards, your staff analysis identifies approximately 21 in the state that can be identified, would no longer have the ability to handle the receipt processing or investigation of complaints of misconduct for specific allegations of misconduct. So I would say as a policy matter, the legislation would not prevent a local initiative that wanted to talk about matters of policy, matters of procedure, but not specific instances of misconduct.
Representative Gottlieb, follow up.
Thank you, Chair. You said, Rep. Duggan, that the bill says that what we're trying to do is have standards that apply uniformly throughout the state. Is there a governing board or entity that would ensure that they apply uniformly throughout the state, or who's giving oversight? Who would be giving oversight to that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what we're trying to address is the fact that there are no uniform standards across these local initiatives, no uniform standards about qualifications or expertise to be on one of these boards, no uniform standards around how they choose which allegations of misconduct to investigate, no uniform standards around how that investigation is conducted, no uniform standards around how they reach a conclusion as it relates to the alleged misconduct, no uniform standards as to, you know, recommendations for discipline of the officer. The Florida Supreme Court has opined that there can be no disciplinary or subpoena power executed, exercised by these local boards. But nevertheless, they are conducting a review, in essence, an investigation, and there are no uniform standards about how they reach their conclusion and what they recommend as a result. And there are no uniform standards of due process protections for the officer involved. So what this legislation is attempting to achieve is to put a stop to that. It does not, at this point, attempt to impose uniform standards. That could be the subject of another legislative effort by a member in the future, if desired. Although this is amending the law enforcement, Chapter 112, the Law Enforcement Officer Bill of Rights, which already specifies the protections that the law enforcement officers and correction officers are entitled to when they are being investigated for allegations of misconduct. And again, and to wrap it up, I would say all of those other six other entities that have the ability to investigate misconduct have uniform standards.
Representative Rayner, thank you, member.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and Rep. I appreciate the conversation that we had yesterday on the floor. I want to touch on the point that you just made about uniform standards. Have you considered, or was it contemplated in this bill? And obviously, it's one page that adopting any of the guidelines from the National Association of Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement, if the concern is that there is no uniform standards.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that question. I also appreciated our conversations yesterday. That's a great logical question. I would say that would be legislation that aimed at that a uniform set of standards would obviously be a comprehensive process. My purpose with this legislation is to continue to emphasize, as the governor did yesterday in his remarks, that Florida is a law enforcement friendly state. Mm-hmm. And that when people want to enter policing in this state, we want to make sure that they are recognized and protected. Mm-hmm. And by extension, their communities are protected as well. And what I mean by that is, if you have a high quality candidate for law enforcement and they're trying to decide what agency they want to apply for employment with, looking around the state, they might decide, I don't want to apply to the enforcement agency in one of these jurisdictions that has one of these entities because I don't want to be potentially subject to that process. I'll go somewhere else. And so the citizens of that community are denied the high quality candidate that might otherwise get if they didn't have this threat out there. Mm-hmm. So in answer to your question, I would say, yes, we might beneficially have an effort to create a set of uniform statewide standards. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying this legislation should be the end of the discussion in that regard. I do think, as I said in response to Rep. Gottlieb's question, there are other entities that citizens can turn to for protection if they feel there has been some misconduct. What I want to do with this legislation is just say, we're going to stop the local efforts. We could come back later and do a statewide effort.
Follow up?
Yes. Thank you for that response. My question then is, I want to turn to, do you know how many currently today, how many civilian or citizen review boards exist in the state of Florida?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. According to the staff analysis in footnote 21, there are, there are 21, according to the staff analysis, there are 21 operating in Florida, and they are listed in footnote 21 of your staff analysis, identifying each jurisdiction. So that's, I'm sure that's accurate.
I have a follow-up.
You're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And this is why you're a great lawyer, because I missed the footnote last night. My question becomes, what is the compelling state interest to preempt these local these 21 local governments from creating a, or passing or enforcing an ordinance that has a civilian review board? Because it feels that we in Tallahassee are telling these 21 communities that we know what's best for their community versus them who actually are in the community, that they know what's best for their own community once they live and play and all those things. So what is the compelling state interest for that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And obviously that's an issue that we struggle with in all forms of legislation, all types of legislation up here. But for me, the compelling state interest, as I mentioned, is making sure that the law enforcement officer is protected. And by extension, protecting the quality of candidates that those communities get to benefit from. We want to be the most law enforcement friendly state. I mean, that is clearly the expressed intent of the governor and the legislature over the last four or five sessions now that I've been here. So we're not telling those local communities, you can't have discussions around community and policing relationships, or policy issues, or procedure issues, or forums to air, just, you know, general community concerns. And if I were the chief of police or the sheriff of a jurisdiction, I would want to foster those discussions. And if I were an elected official, local elected official, I think that would be a useful exercise. But all of those elected officials or heads of agencies have the ability to foster those discussions. We're not telling them that they can't. They need to exercise the leadership to do it. And so, and the community organizations need to do so as well. So we're not telling them they can't have those kinds of discussions. All this does is say, with respect to specific officers and specific allegations of misconduct, we want those discussions to be in established forums where due process protections are already in place.
One more follow-up. You're recognized.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. You've mentioned a couple of times, and even when we just on the floor, that you want to make sure that the intention is to make sure that Florida's a law enforcement friendly state, that these citizen review boards wouldn't hinder someone from possibly wanting to go serve in a particular jurisdiction. With that being said, has FDLE or any other entity reported that these civilian review boards are a hindrance to recruitment? Or is this something that we just kind of anecdotally think, or we just want to just, you know, kind of preempt it in a way?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The discussions that I have had with representatives of the state Fraternal Order of Police organization have included statements to that effect, that this can hinder recruitment and retention of officers within jurisdictions that have these entities in place. But I concede that that's anecdotal, but that's, yes, they're the front line. And they're the ones who've said that to me.
Thank you for Representative Bracy Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning.
Good morning.
Just for clarity's sake, if you could just acknowledge, if it's true that you do acknowledge the benefits of these agencies, and this is in no way an attempt to chip away at their existence.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it is chipping, it's eliminating them. They will not be able to continue their operation in the current format of investigating specific allegations of misconduct. So that the intent is to stop that. But I do concede that if there are local community forums where, as I said, issues of general policy, procedure, issues of trust are discussed and aired, people can come and say, this has been my experience. We're not talking about officer so-and-so, but we're talking about this law enforcement agency in my opinion, like if I were to come to the podium at one of these forums and say, in my opinion, this agency has a history of bad relationships with the community or a history of, you know, racist behavior, I'm not saying we shouldn't have forums where those discussions could take place. What I'm attempting here is nobody can come to the podium and say, Officer so-and-so is a racist or Officer so-and-so committed misconduct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Follow up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know I said I only had one question. So you don't see the benefit of civilians being able to weigh those conversations from a civilian perspective. You don't see those benefits.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see the benefits of having forums where community conversations around larger issues can occur. I do not see the benefit of a forum where members who may have no qualifications or expertise have an open-ended process with no standards to subject an officer to an endless process of public scrutiny at a minimum, public scorn potentially, with no end in sight, where the officer has to potentially spend their own money representing themselves in that forum. No, I see no benefit to that.
Thank you. Thank you for your questions. There are no amendments on the bill. Is there public testimony on the bill? We have Jim Sniffen, Florida FOP, waving in support. We have Denise Rock, Florida Cares Charity, wishes to speak, or no, waving in opposition, sorry. We have Mike Kelly, Florida FOP, waving in support. Jonathan Weber from SPLC Action Fund, waving in support. Opponent. Waving in opposition. Thank you. Felix Del Risotto, Miami FOP Lodge, waving in support. Zahara Abizanajad, you wishing to speak or please post? You're recognized.
Thank you for having me here. I appreciate it. Let me speak. My name is Zahra Abiyaznejad, and I'm from Gainesville. 4 years ago, my son's been murdered, 3 men involved. And I want to read the petition I write, so this explains short version of the story. And then I have something else to say, if it's okay. My son was beaten and murdered in November 2019. 3 men were involved, and 1 man fired his gun and killed my son. Neighbors called 911, dispatched to report that they heard shots were fired. The police officer went to his neighborhood, drove around, and spoke to the man who was walking his dog. That's one of the business. They never used it in the court. The man pointed to my son's home where the shooting took place. In the front of yard, I apologize. It's still very painful. And he saw it. The officer drove by, but never got out and knocked on my son's door or the neighbor's doors to see if anyone needed medical assistance. Meanwhile, my son was inside dying from the gunshot wound. I believe officer must investigate more truly when they received calls of shots fired. My family was shocked when we find out about it in the court. They didn't tell us. We had to write to know everything from the beginning, but they kept the secrets, and our pain made worse to find out that an officer was outside my son's home while he lay inside dying. I believe policy must change, requiring officer to take more actions when investigating the certainly knock on the door. Each gunshot needs to be taken very seriously to prevent someone from dying, and so people know their community cares enough to investigate. A life being taken and is a big deal, and it's always gonna be a big deal to me, because I am asking, how do I show my rage? How do I act when these community and agencies who are responsible, the light was on, he didn't get out of the car, and I've been asking all the time before court, no one called 911. Two men called 911. Each life is serious. And then they tell me karma. They tell me a lot of agency involved. All these agencies didn't care what I'm gonna go through. Yeah, my son is passed. I didn't even get to identify my son. I didn't see him. They let him rot 5 days in the house. They shot him from the back. I believe I found out all of this after 2 years in the court and slowly. Okay. And they caught him, they shot him from the back. I believe he heard the first one, the second one got him. God knows what they did. All the mistakes, state attorney's office, they're acknowledged. Sheriffs, FBI, I call them, they hang up on me, get a lawyers. And then after 2 years, attorneys calling me saying they trick you guys into this. I keep asking, should I get attorney? They said, no, we got it. We got all of them. They didn't even been convicted of murder. The shooter got only 10 years for other crime he done, okay? And the other two are free. What do we show in the community? Who is gonna be accountable? Who is responsible? What do we show in our community that it's okay, go kill and get away from it?
Thank you for your testimony here today.
Thank you, I appreciate it. I appreciate it, and I'm sorry. I did my best to not get emotional, but never gonna end. There are details I remember, and I never will forget. And I appreciate it if you guys consider and look onto that, please. I asked for help, nobody helped. Nobody mentions about the mistake they made. How can be all these mistakes in one town with all these agencies? It's impossible.
Thank you for coming today.
Thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
Next, we have Lisa Henning, wishes to speak. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'd like to say a special thank you to the Governor, Speaker Renner, Chair Trunow, and our bill sponsor, Representative Duggan, for taking this issue up and understanding where law enforcement is coming from. Law enforcement is increasingly scrutinized by the public, and by the very nature of their job, that is needed. That we don't say that we don't need to be scrutinized. What we are saying is the general public does not have the education and knowledge of how many people actually investigate a law enforcement officer daily. And what the impact of social media, the press, body cams, all the different things and avenues that law enforcement are scrutinized by on top of the investigations. A lot of people don't understand that in our criminal justice system, if you have someone that by the very nature of their job, you have required them to have limited rights, you have taken away their right to remain silent, which is known as the Broderick Rule. They are then protected and given something called the Garrity Act. This is a tightrope walk within the criminal justice system between defense and prosecution and the officer's ability to have due process. So there's a legality there that can affect the outcomes of actually being able to prosecute a law enforcement officer if you are not handling it correctly. And there is a concern that if we are making decisions on specific investigations and taking officers who have already been investigated, and those investigations, once closed, are all public record for everyone, it can be taken to the press, to the media. All they have to do is make a public records request for that information. We're not hiding information. I just want everyone to realize that what we're asking for is a due process protection that needs to be put in place, not just for the officers, but for the general public as well. We would love to encourage trust and education between the public, but there are better ways to expend money and better ways to do that. One would be to actually, listen to the law enforcement officers who are telling you that there are training programs such as jiu-jitsu, which use a very minimum amount of force to take maximum control, which has cut down in every agency that they have had on excessive use of force charges. People need to understand that there are other avenues to engender trust, things like civilian ride-alongs, civilian academies. These are educational pieces so that people actually understand what a law enforcement officer's job is, and that law enforcement officers are not like on TV where they're running around with a partner having fun chasing people down. That is not what their job is, and the majority of their job is on their own and often in the dark. So when you're dealing with people, the last thing they want to do after being investigated over even an anonymous complaint is to be dragged through the mud yet again. And that does affect the retention and hiring of law enforcement officers. Representative Rayner, you asked that very specific question. I hear it all the time. And that's what my job is, because to be quite frank with you, law enforcement officers, because of their, they have no right to remain silent, they are very specific about what they will and will not communicate with people, and that's my job. That's why I'm here. And I appreciate your support on the bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Loretta Phillipson wishes to speak. You're recognized.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you, committee members. My name is Lloyd Phillipson, and I live in Pasco County. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to me today. I'm against HB 601 as it is written, as this will continue to allow state of Florida public agencies to operate without any input from the public that they are there to protect. Since being released from incarceration, I am part of the public again. Being so, I have obtained public records of 20 officers who have committed offenses such as verbal abuse, battery, rape. Also, FDC policy states to fire the person that is caught sleeping on the job. I have records to prove otherwise. They're still employed. Yet, still, these officers remain employed in a state of Florida agency. Rather than passing this bill, how about we promote open communication and collaboration between public agencies and the communities they serve by fostering a relationship that values public input and engagement in the operations of the Florida state agencies. Let's empower state of Florida public agencies to operate efficiently while ensuring transparency and engagement from the public. Citizens' oversight is the public trying to make things better rather than continuing to hammer Florida citizens like nails. Please do not support HB 1 as it is written. And yes, let's have a statewide citizens' Review Board. It is a great idea. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have William Smith, Florida PBA, waiving in support. We have Pamela Birchfort, Florida State Conference of NAACP Branches, waiving in opposition. That concludes our public testimony. Members, we are in debate. What, 1 second. Okay, you may approach. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Barney Bishop. I'm with Florida Smart Justice. And I was going to just wave in support of the bill today, and I apologize for not submitting the correct forms, but I'll do that as soon as I finish. In Tallahassee, well, first of all, let me say that police officers, as we all know, put on a badge and a gun, go to work every day. They're held to a very high standard. They don't know, and their family doesn't know, if they're going to come home safe that evening. They are scrutinized every which way. The media is not fair. They don't always print the truth. Social media has no guardrails whatsoever. So here in Tallahassee, for example, we have a police advisory board. It's got limited authority. It can only operate after there's been an investigation. First off, there is already a great amount of scrutiny. First off, all law enforcement officers are going to have internal affairs review. Second off, whether that's positive or negative, the district attorney, the state attorney can prosecute as well if the internal affairs report, regardless of what it says. So there's plenty of public input. You can go to a city commission, you can go to a county commission meeting, you can go to the press, and you can make any allegations that you want. But law enforcement officers, for the fact that they provide safety to us, they are entitled to every constitutional right of due process. And these police advisory boards here in Tallahassee, for example, that hasn't been the case. In fact, we complained about members on that police advisory board who one person had a mug that said, F the police. Well, she's prejudiced. That person was prejudiced against law enforcement. Should never have been on the advisory board to begin with. And that's the problem. These boards aren't taken seriously in some cases if they're advisory. If they have authority to do it, they're not the proper venue to have a review because it doesn't provide the law enforcement officers with due process. They are entitled to protect their own constitutional rights. So thank you very much to the sponsor for filing this bill, and Smart Justice absolutely asks you to support this very good bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, we are in debate. Representative Bracey Davis, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me first say that I say these comments having the utmost respect for law enforcement officers. My own Orange County Sheriff office is here in this room today, but I do have problems with this bill. First, it kind of confuses me that I've heard so much from some members of this body in terms of small government and how this bill is basically a preemption. It confuses me. It's almost it doesn't make sense that, you know, are we for local government and handling the business of local government, or are we not? And I'm of the thought that allow local government to do their job and however they deem appropriate to do their job. And it confuses me that sometimes we're in favor of preemptions and sometimes we are not. Secondly, my problem with this bill is why don't we, and this is just asking the question in the atmosphere, why don't we trust citizens, civilians in the community? Why don't we trust their voices? Why don't we trust their perspective? Why don't we trust it? Is it because we are afraid of what they will say or what they will determine or what the outcome of their analysis will be? Why don't we trust the community and the citizens to operate on these levels? Is it that we don't want to hear their voices, we don't want to hear their stories, or we want to suppress their stories? It really confuses me. Is it we're afraid of it? Are we afraid of what's on the other end of citizens having these voices and citizens having these opportunities to affect change? And I'll tell you this. I've said it on many times in this very committee, I represent a majority-minority community. So it is, that's, my district is made up of a majority of minorities. So it's very, very important to me that I look at these bills through the lens of the people that I represent. And what I do know as citizens and civilians, oversight agencies increase trust. They increase trust with communities, especially Black community, people of color, with the law enforcement, especially those who historically don't have a good relationship with law enforcement. So I know from my district's perspective, from my community's perspective, this is beneficial. So when I ask the question, do you not see any benefit there, I can say, I can attest that these kind of agencies and these relationships between communities don't necessarily that have a great relationship with law enforcement, these are beneficial. So I will be respectfully voting down on this bill today.
Thank you. Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. This is a difficult bill for me as well, Representative Duggan, and I have nothing but respect for you and appreciate the conversations that we had prior to this bill. You know, since I got elected, I've done nothing but try to support law enforcement. One of my first bills was affectionately known as the shooter bill. I won't discuss that now. And I passed the helped pass the SWAT medic bill, and I really want to support the men and women of law enforcement. And one of the things I always grapple with here is that we have two masters sometimes, and you know, in terms of you know whether or not we want to support the administration or whether or not we want to support the officers. Here, what I think I find really troubling for me about the bill is that we really have three masters, because we have the public and their ability and desire to get involved and sort of police the police. We also have law enforcement, and they need to be able to do their job and to do their job appropriately. And then we have the local mores that we need to protect from the administrative perspective. And I'm really grappling with this bill, and it's something that I'd like to support because something that you said I hold really dear, which is due process. And I think that we do need to have due process for both sides. And what I would rather see us do is pass a framework that all law enforcement has to follow, as opposed to one repository. And maybe I have the bill wrong, but one repository for receipts and complaints, because I think what we're doing is we're creating a larger system for the receipt of misconduct. And we're gonna have 180-day rule violations. We're creating, to the law enforcement officer, perhaps greater delay in the processing of minor complaints that shouldn't be a complaint to begin with in the first place. I represent law enforcement officers, many of which who have had to be placed on paid administrative leave, but they're riding a desk when they'd rather be out on the street because even the current scheme isn't quick enough. And I see just potential problems here, and I would really like to be able to vote in support of a bill that creates a better scheme and that creates due process for everybody involved. And again, I see it as a three-sided bill in terms of the concerns. The public, the officer, and the agencies need to deal with their own officers as they see fit. And so I would love to support it. I'll probably see it at least once more, if not twice more. And I know that you and I will continue to have conversations for today. I'm down as more of a symbolic vote, but I hope to be up on it sometime in the future.
Thank you. Ranking Member Rayner, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And Rep, I appreciate once again our conversations that we had. And you know, I first want to have to level set my comments, and it's sad that we have to say this, but my comments in no way are about any disdain or disrespect I have for law enforcement. I have the utmost respect for the work that they do. I have really good law enforcement in the districts that I serve on both sides of the bay. Great relationships with them. However, a couple of things, and I'm going to try to keep it succinct. I serve a community of folks, as Representative Racy Davis indicated, that civilian review boards are part and parcel of how there is trust and accountability in the community. Whether we want to admit it or not, many of our communities, communities that look like people like me, there is distrust of with law enforcement, of law enforcement in those communities. And when, and we have seen that there's been a move to community policing, being where you live, where you serve, all of those things. And how do we develop trust? It's a relationship, right? If we're in a relationship, we're not, but if we were in a relationship, we would communicate. We would be transparent with one another. Well, I would tell you the things you I like and I, the things I dislike, and you would do the same thing back and forth, and there would be a level of accountability. And that's just at a base level. And so when we're thinking about it holistically on a policy level, or we're thinking about it holistically on a community, on a service level, it's the same thing for me. And what I've seen, and I did the Googles, and I told you I was going to do that. We've seen in areas where there have been civilian review boards, where there has been increased trust between law enforcement in the community. There has been increased folks being able to work together. And also, I found on the FDLE website that there was a survey that was taken. This was probably about 10 years ago, where that survey's results indicate that agencies that are using civilian review boards are experiencing positive results from the agency in community. The agency heads that are using these boards are showing transparency to the community that they are serving. The officers have come to accept these boards, and it appears that the officers are responding positively to the challenge. But this particular law enforcement executive said, based on my research and survey data, I would recommend agencies impanel a citizen review board. This is from the FDLE. This is on the internet. I Googled the value of citizen review boards. That's the first thing that came up. And yet, we're telling folks and we're telling the people that we shouldn't have this based on what it seems to me be anecdotal evidence. I think that we can most certainly be law enforcement friendly and still have civilian review boards. Those are not mutually exclusive. And I feel like, as Representative Gottlieb has spoken to, that there's a better way to achieve this. There's a better way if that we do develop uniform standards. And you know, I've heard a lot today about due process. I believe that there's due process, as you indicated, if there is a complaint by a citizen, or you know, officer has misconduct, that there is there's due process. So you have that due process. But also, you know, and as someone who is not a law enforcement officer, I feel like if I'm a good cop, I don't mind that there's a citizen review board, because I'm a good cop and I'm serving my community and I'm doing what's right. And so when we kind of step into this, and we are not allowing the communities that we're serving to be involved. And I understand, you know, we've had the conversation of how they could be involved. But in this way, it doesn't feel right. It feels like we're doing a disservice to our community and to our people. And most certainly preempting local government, once again, that's problematic as well, because we're also telling these communities we know better than you do. And I don't want anyone telling me that they know better than how to run my house versus anyone else, and I live in my house. So it's the same thing. I can't get there. And I would like to get there, but I can't. And so because of the things that I've outlined, and because of what the FDLE has said, that civilian review boards are beneficial, and they help in increase transparency and trust in the community. And I've seen it with my own eyes in St. Petersburg. I've watched it happen in St. Petersburg, where we've had these, and the relationship between law enforcement and the community has literally transformed. Literally transformed. That for us to eliminate them, I don't think that this is the answer. So I will be a respectful no on this bill. And, you know, I don't know if it's going to get any better to where I could be a yes based on our conversation, but today I will have to be a no.
Thank you. Representative Brandon, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a longtime member of this committee and past chairman of this committee, when I came in this morning, I told the chairman and some of the staff I was going to keep my mouth shut. I have mixed opinions on lots of bills that are coming before us today, but I want to give you the other side. And I appreciate everybody's views, and I see all of them. But let me just real quick, and we've got other things to do, give you the policeman's side. And I've often wanted to do this. And we can't bring props. I'd like to bring a set of handcuffs in here, and I'd like to stand right there by Chairman Duggan and get any of y'all to put that set of handcuffs on me if I don't want you to put them on me. And I'm going to tell you what, none of y'all could put them on me. If I didn't want you to put a set of handcuffs on me, none of you as an individual could put those handcuffs on me. Now, that goes back to somebody's mentioned the policeman most of the time being out there, I think it was the lady from the PBA or the Police Chiefs Association, being out there by yourself and in the dark. And it's just you, and you're trying to put the handcuffs on that guy. And then here comes a guy from the public, and he's got a video camera, and he videos you, and it looks bad. Well, that there comes the juxtaposition between civilian review boards and police review boards. Now, if I'm going to be judged on that, let me take up for a police review board for just a second. If I'm going to be judged on that, I would rather have a group of individuals who have rolled in the mud and the blood themselves and know what that situation's like rather than a banker making that decision about me. Now, if we've got bank fraud down at the bank, send in the bank examiner. Don't send the policeman down there because I don't want him reviewing the bank records. So it's the same situation. And Representative Chair Duggan done a very good job of describing people not wanting to apply. One thing he did neglect to tell you, there are people that leave too. Not only people that don't want to apply to some of these places, and I think most of them and they seem to come to me because of being a past policeman and still being in the legislature and call me sometimes and say, well, I left here and I went over here. And a lot of times they're going from the police department to the sheriff's office. I'm like, well, why is that? Well, maybe it seems to be that some of these civilian review boards are more popular in cities and metropolitan areas more than they are in some of these sheriff's offices. So that's why. So that's a problem. They're not only not applying, they're leaving. So that hurts that community. When good policemen leave, then that community suffers. But as they've all pointed out, there are multiple layers, including, as somebody said, the media a while ago, that review everything a policeman does. Heck, they wear cameras now. Sometimes I say, I don't know why somebody wants to be a policeman. It's a tough job, and it's getting harder and harder. So think about what's been said today, whether all of these layers, they're not going away, state and federal, as he said. You know, lots of times these things go through all the state hoops, the police review board, the state attorney's office, and then here come the feds. Here comes the FBI, as you mentioned. Here comes the U.S. attorney's office. So there are multiple layers there. So think about that, and think about that policeman's rights. And I'll leave that challenge there. If any of y'all want to meet me somewhere, you can't do it here because we'll have props. I'll let you do that. Maybe I'll let Senator Simon and Jonathan Martin over there, the other senator, they're two pretty big guys. I don't think they could put a set of handcuffs on me if I didn't want them to. Now, how are they going to eventually do it? They're going to escalate that force. And that looks bad. But the law also says a policeman doesn't have to retreat from making an arrest. And sometimes it just escalates, and it's usually not that policeman that's escalating that situation, but then he's going to be judged on it.
Representative Gottlieb.
Thank you, Chair. It's not a, I know I'm not to debate again. I have a point of order or a question. We had a speaker who testified, and I didn't get the agency that she testified on behalf of. I don't know if it was FOP or the sheriff's. It wasn't identified. So
Lisa Henning is with the state FOP.
I'm sorry.
State FOP.
Thank you. That's all. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate the robust debate today. Seeing no other debate, Representative Duggan, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you to all of the members for your comments, your debate, and for your attention. Even if you didn't debate, I appreciate it. I know these are fraught issues. I want to reiterate that I personally am not intending, and this legislation will not accomplish the result of prohibiting community forums where these discussions about larger issues, not involving specific instances of misconduct, can take place. Rep. Rayner, I appreciate you providing the data from FDLE, although I will observe that based on what you said, it sounds like those review boards were constituted by the actual law enforcement agency, right? I think that's a qualitative difference from a local government creating a civilian review board. I mean, to Chair Brannon's point, an enforcement agency constituted board is going to have a higher level of expertise and qualifications and insight and perspective. But I appreciate you spotlighting that data from FDLE. I don't know that I can improve on what Rep. Brannon said. So with that, I appreciate your consideration, and I ask for your support.
Thank you. Representative Duggan, having closed on his bill, Ben, please call the roll on HB 601 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett? Bracey Davis?
No.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
No.
Jacques?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner?
No.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yarkovsky? Yes. Chair Trunow?
Yes.
14 yeas, 3 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show HB 601 reported favorably.
Thank you.
Next bill up for consideration today is PCS for HB 489, unlawful possession of firearms or weapons by a person adjudicated delinquent. By Representative Tuck. Representative Tuck, you are recognized to present your bill from your chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and good morning, members. House Bill 489 amends the statute relating to right to possess firearms if an adjudication of guilt has been withheld. In a felony proceeding, if the court withholds adjudication, then an adult does not become a convicted felon, thus maintaining their gun rights. However, if an adjudication of delinquency is withheld, which reflects the same leniency shown to a young person, the youth loses their Second Amendment rights until they turn 24. The bill ensures that the juvenile language mirrors the adult language. If the state, in their plea offer, or judge, in their sentencing, cut the child a break with the withhold of adjudication, the child can enter adulthood with their Second Amendment rights. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Having presented her bill, any questions on the bill? Members, questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, are there any amendments? Seeing no amendments, is there public testimony? We have some public testimony. We have Aaron Wyatt, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, waving in support. We have Corrine Mixon, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, a proponent. We have Nancy Lothar, PhD, Florida PTA, wishing to speak. You are recognized. You are a proponent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning to everyone. Florida PTA rises in support of this bill, which is aligned with National PTA's position statement on gun safety and violence prevention. I'm going to be very brief, just suggesting as the bill moves forward, that you might want to distinguish between types of felonies, forcible felonies, versus, for example, as the committee has just voted, porch piracy. So, thank you.
Thank you. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waves in support. That concludes public testimony. Members, debate on the bill. We have any debate? Representative Gottlieb, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I support the bill, so I'm going to vote up on it because I do think that we should have parity in sentencing. And what I mean by that is that if two individuals commit a crime together, one's 18, one's 17, in terms of the collateral punishments, even though one's going to be in the juvenile system and one's going to be in the adult system, they should be punished together. My concern here is that there's recent trends, and when I say recent, in the past 10 years, with the United States Supreme Court, where the United States Supreme Court has recognized that the juvenile mind doesn't really fully develop until the age of 24, and then, of course, there's people like me who are late bloomers. thank you. And you know, and I recognize that that juveniles can also, you know, through the process be retrained and disciplined and so on and so forth. And you know, the concern is really that we've reduced restrictions on the ability to own a gun or certainly carry concealed. And I'm up on the bill, but I would caution us that as, you know, as a, and I know this is a, you know, sort of a Second Amendment type of an argument, but I really do think that this kind of proves an argument that before we're giving somebody the ability to own a gun, especially maybe somebody that's committed a crime and somebody that was a youthful offender and somebody that didn't show perhaps proper discretion, that we should have some oversight. And I'm a gun owner, and I'm a carry concealed permit owner. And I've taken those courses, and I just think that this is something that we should take a second look at. I believe in the concept and the parity in sentencing, so I wholly, fully support the bill in that regard. But I do think that, you know, as we talked about, there are people who will shoot you for stealing a package off their front porch. You know, and I just think, for safety reasons, that we should consider as it relates to the Second Amendment, some tighter restrictions. Not restrictions, but just tighter requirements on the ability to own a firearm, and just that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Ranking Member Rayner, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep Tuck, since you harassed me, no, I'm just kidding. I appreciate the conversation and the text message that you sent last night. You know how I feel about guns and Second Amendment, but I do, to your point that you've made, and I think it's a very accurate point, it's about parity. And, you know, I think that if we are going to do this, there should be parity. I mean, you have a cross-section of support from criminal defense lawyers, the PTA, and the NRA. Never thought I would be on the side of anything the NRA agreed with, but here we are, you know. Things happen. And so I do appreciate you just kind of bringing the law in some type of consistency and parity. So because of that and your harassment and hazing of me, I'll be up on this bill. Thank you.
Seeing no other debate, Representative Tuck, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't think I can do better than getting the ranking member's support. So with that, I close.
Representative Tuck, having closed on her bill, Ben, please call the roll on PCS for HB 489 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett? Bracey Davis?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin? Rayner?
Yes.
Silvers? Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yarkoski?
Yes.
Chair Truno?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show PCS for HB 489 reported favorably. Thank you. The next bill for consideration today is PCS for HB 231, exposures to first responders to fentanyl and fentanyl analogs, by Representative Baker. Representative Baker, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In recent years, there has been a reported increase in law enforcement and first responders having symptoms due to exposure to fentanyl. And in some instances, officers were administered Narcan to reverse the life-threatening effects of the opioid. What this bill does is it seeks to protect our first responders by creating a criminal penalty if a person 18 years or older who is unlawfully in possession of fentanyl exposes a first responder to such fentanyl and an overdose or serious bodily injury of the first responder results. The bill also provides an affirmative defense if the first responder acted so far outside of the scope of ordinary care in his or her profession that he or she caused or substantially contributed to the exposure. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, there are no amendments on the bill. Is there any public testimony? We have Arely Colon Laron, SPLC Action Fund, an opponent. You wish to speak? You're recognized.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Arely Colon Laron, and I'm the Florida Policy Associate for the SPLC Action Fund. I urge you to vote no on HB 231. First, I do want to apologize to Rep. Baker for not meeting with you prior to this meeting to discuss our concerns. This bill would benefit from some additional clarification in the definition of overdose or serious bodily injury on lines 31 to 34 of the PCS, specifically the phrase drug toxicity. The term drug toxicity is commonly understood to encompass a broad range of effects from mild symptoms like lightheadedness and nausea to more severe consequences such as seizures and coma. Including drug toxicity in this definition of overdose or serious bodily injury takes language that is otherwise narrowly defined and makes it overly broad. Moreover, this bill lacks a clear method for establishing verifiable proof of drug toxicity. Given that the penalty for offenses is a first-degree felony, it is essential to establish a transparent means of confirming drug toxicity, such as through a toxicity test or another widely accepted medical procedure conducted by first responders. The staff analysis is clear. Fentanyl, while an incredibly addictive substance, is, quote, relatively difficult to transmit through skin contact without a transdermal patch and likely would not remain airborne in sufficient quantities to cause a medical issue if inhaled. That's why it is so important to get this definition right. Until the ambiguity surrounding the term drug toxicity is resolved and a medically verifiable standard is established, we urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Lisa Henning, Florida State Fraternal Order of Police, waving in support. Katie Kelly, Collier County Sheriff's Office, waving in support. Samuel Wagner, Florida League of Cities, waving in support. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, waving in support. That concludes public testimony. Members, we're in debate. Anyone wish to debate? Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So I oppose the bill for a couple of reasons. At lines 35 to 41, which is the portion that makes it criminal, here's what happens. An individual overdoses. Let's say they intended to buy cocaine. I understand it's illegal. They have a problem. They intend to buy cocaine. The cocaine is tainted with fentanyl, or they buy marijuana and the marijuana is tainted with fentanyl. The person overdoses, necessitating an EMS response. The EMS responder comes and negligently, you know, somehow ingests the fentanyl that the person who has overdosed and is unconscious, and that causes an overdose or serious bodily injury to the first responder. This is a strict liability crime that a possession would be a third-degree felony for, but now for this person who has overdosed, they've now, while in an overdose state, committed a first-degree felony, and they likely didn't intend to ingest the fentanyl in the first place or even possess the fentanyl because they were trying to buy a separate drug. I see it as criminalizing drug addiction as opposed to really doing what it's trying to do, which is stop the flow of fentanyl. And I'm not encouraging people to use cocaine or marijuana for that matter, but the problem is the introduction of the fentanyl, which is a lab-made drug. And then I know it looks good that it has an affirmative defense, but the affirmative defense is if the first responder acted so far outside the scope of ordinary care, that's not negligently pricking one's finger with a needle that happens to be laying around. Acting outside the scope of ordinary care is picking up that needle, purposely putting it into your vein and ingesting the substance. It's just, it's an affirmative defense that doesn't exist to a crime that is a strict liability crime. And what I mean by a strict liability crime, for anybody who doesn't understand, there's essentially no defense to this. So a person's passed out after an overdose, and a first responder gets sick, which is absolutely horrible for them to happen, but very unlikely, according to the bill analysis. And now we've elevated, perhaps, a first-time offender, college student, who's passed out ingesting a drug that they didn't intend to ingest that harms a first responder. I just think it's a very draconian result. I like the idea of criminalizing anybody who harms a law enforcement officer or first responder. I just don't like this mechanism for doing so.
Any other debate? Seeing no other debate, Representative Baker, you recognize the closing your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for all of your comments. And I know we spoke off the record, and I will work with you on some of your concerns. We can work a little bit to change maybe the language of the affirmative defense. I think my intention was maybe more negligence, more reckless than maybe what the wording currently is. But this is a harm that does need to be mitigated, right? Fentanyl is 50 to 100 times more powerful than heroin, so there is a very substantial risk that officers are dealing with than other drugs. It's a dangerous substance, so I do believe that we need protections in place. The person who does have something laced with fentanyl, maybe they don't know that there is fentanyl laced in it, but they do know that they're possessing an illicit drug, right? The underlying drug is illegal. So I do ask for your favorable support. I will continue to work on some of the language, and that is, with that, I close. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Having closed on her bill, Ben, please call the roll on PCS for HB 231 and announce the vote.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett? Bracey Davis?
No.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
No.
Jock?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rayner?
No.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Yarkoski?
Yes.
Chair Truno?
Yes.
14 yeas, 3 nays, Mr. Chair.
Show PCS for HB 231 reported favorably. Thank you. Well, we survived our second day criminal justice committee today. That concludes our agenda for today's meeting. Members, if there's no further business, Representative Baker moves we rise without objection. This meeting is adjourned.